Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to the Faith Together podcast. Lindsay here, joined with my friend Leon. Hi, Leon.
Hi, Lindsay.
Well, Leon, it's great to be together today and to continue on in this really important conversation all about screens and screen time safety.
Yes, I have learned so much from the research we've done on this.
Yes.
And in particular, I'm thankful for the book from Arlene Pellicane.
Arlene Pellicane, that is right. Yes.
That really has helped us in our thoughts about this.
Absolutely. I know a few things as I've been reading, Leon. I've been convicted myself for a few of my social media practices and trying to, take some time away from, I think, my most addictive social media app is Instagram, because I just love watching the stories and all the videos. And, you just get sucked in, Leon.
Well, that is probably one of the things that distinguishes us from our generations, the differences between you and I, because I'm still a Facebook person and
You're
I've really not
Facebook.
Gotten Instagram.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of play with it a little occasionally because my students will say something and say, hey, you got to go look at that. And so I've got it on my phone, but I rarely look at it. I'm still a Facebook person. So that lets people know I'm kind of old.
Well, it's okay. And, I think everybody has different things on their phones that they're drawn to, whether it's sports apps. March Madness was a while ago, but I know that that was a pull for a lot of people,
sure,
just following their brackets and all that kind of thing, or whether it's just texting.
Yeah. And it really doesn't matter what that is. It's just the fact that it takes our attention, it takes our time. And we're learning that this isn't an evil thing, but we need to understand the impact that it has on us and our families. And then we need to take proactive approach to determining how we're going to use it and when we're going to use it and how much we're going to let it take time from our lives.
Yeah, I think that's a really good word, proactive.
Yeah.
Because if we're just reacting to, social media, to our screens, even, YouTube and tablets and all those things, games, if we're just constantly reacting to it, we aren't finding good habits with it, because it will always win, right?
Yeah. And of course, this includes television as well. It's not just computer stuff, right?
Just recognizing
That we need to be in control instead of it controlling us.
Yeah. So a little bit of a recap of where we've been.
Yeah. So as I was going through and preparing for today, I was looking through my book and I just kind of opened the cover and I wrote this note in here.
Oh.
So this was back in February when I first started reading the book, and I wrote this kind of to myself and dated it so it would just catch my attention. So this is what I said in the beginning of the book. I said, how ironic that while I am reading the intro of this book, my granddaughter is playing on her tablet.
Oh.
And we were visiting them at the time. And not that that's a bad thing, but I'm reading about some of the concerns of kids with their tablets. And there my granddaughter is on her tablet, which is fine. And in no way do I want to imply that my daughter is not managing their time, but it was just a recognition of how easy it is that that's our first instinct. That's the first place we go.
Mm-hmm.
And I have as a review of what we've been talking about, I am more aware when I'm with my grandkids now about this. I think I shared with you, we started buying these non-competitive board games.
Yeah, the cooperative board games.
Yeah, cooperative board games, yeah. And so I'm more aware than I was before of saying, hey, let's play a game, or hey, let's go outside, or hey, let's wrestle, or whatever the situation may be, to just say, okay, let's not be on the screens right now.
Right. Yeah, I have also been challenged over these last couple of weeks to back off of Instagram, of course, as I said, but also in real life, practical ways, Facebook, Instagram, even Marco Polo is an app that you do like video messaging back and forth. I've realized that texting, whatever it might be, people that are in our family that are far away, I find myself, I'll just text them that, or I'll just, you know, send them a quick video message on that, or voice memo, or because we have it all at our fingertips and it makes things a lot quicker and easier and more efficient. But I've been reminded that a phone call, you know, and actually taking time to talk with people, it means a lot.
Isn't it weird that we have phones, but we don't use them to talk to people?
Yeah, I know.
Who would have ever thought?
Yes, exactly. So I've just been really challenging myself. If that person's far away, give them just a phone call and have an actual conversation. And then also realizing that as much as we can have one-on-one good connection in person with people, it's really healthy to do. So that's been a good filter I've started to put onto just my everyday connections with others in my family and not in my family.
Yeah. And I think for me, going through this series has just made me aware of how many times I reach for my phone. I went out to breakfast with my wife recently, and I started to reach for my phone and thought, nope, we're at breakfast. The phone stays in the pocket.
Right.
And so just things like that are really, really simple. I'm more aware of other people's use of phones, of my own use of phones. And maybe that's what this has been about for me, is just to be a little more aware.
Yeah, just to raise your level of awareness. I also had really good conversations these last couple Sundays with my team of leaders that love and serve kids. And we've talked about how important it is to have eye contact with kids and, you know, really take initiative in those small group settings to just connect and have good conversation. And that kind of reminds me of our webinar coming up, the A+ social skills for kids, and how those are really important for them to learn right now, because it's not something that they have as much exposure to because of the level of technology they use and screens that they're on all the time at school, for school, and at home. So if you haven't signed up for our webinar, shameless plug there.
Since you brought that up, why don't you just give us a little more detail? We'll talk about it at the end of our podcast to remind people, but since we're there, why don't you just give us some little details there?
So we're going to be hosting a webinar called A+ Skills, the 5 skills every child needs in a tech-driven world. And this webinar is going to be on Thursday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. And we will be...
And that's Central Daylight Time,
right? Yes, Central Daylight Time. Yep. And we will be presenting Arlene Pellicane, the author of Screen Kids, the book we've been working through on the podcast here. She's going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking through these 5 A+ skills. So those 5 skills are affection, appreciation, anger management, apology, and attention.
Yeah, so the design is that it would be like an hour webinar, right?
Yeah.
But we're going to hopefully leave like 15 to 20 minutes for questions that people can write in while the webinar is going on, and we'll ask those of Arlene toward the end.
Yes.
So it'll be very interactive from that perspective. And we're going to have some giveaways during the webinar.
We will have giveaways, and it's absolutely free.
Absolutely.
So you can sign up on our website, centerff.com, and all the links will be shared with you so that you can jump on with us on Thursday, May 2nd. And if for some reason you can't join us at that time, you can still sign up and the recording will be sent to you.
Yeah, for sure. And so today's topic
is
continuing with screen time and focusing on emotional health.
Yes.
And I have to admit to you, this is a hard topic for me.
Mm-hmm.
As I read, of all the chapters in the book, as I read this one, it just made my heart hurt.
Yeah.
Looking at the statistics and the emotional impact on kids and teenagers that screen time is having, that I think generally we just don't give a lot of thought about, that some of the things that we see as issues that our kids are dealing with both emotionally and psychologically may be in part a result of the impact of screen time.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. This was not an easy chapter to read, but it's an important one. And I'm so glad that we're going to dive into some of the things that we've learned specifically around the research that's been done on this topic.
Yeah.
I think those statistics, you and I have talked about this, Leon, statistics aren't everything, but they definitely give you a picture of what's going on and help you to really see clearly the impacts of screen time with the emotional health.
Yeah. So let's start this conversation by rehashing something that we've said in an earlier podcast, and that is, our intent here is not to be doom and gloom about technology.
Not at all.
Our attempt here is to make us aware of things that we may not be aware of so that we can take a proactive approach to how we're going to deal with it. And so let me just say up front that some of the things we're going to share today are a bit alarming. And we're going to do this in a bad news, good news format like we have the last two podcasts,
yes,
right?
Yes. We're going to start with the bad news because we need to get that in front of us, and then we're going to end on a high note with the good news.
All right. So, yes. Let's get started.
Knowledge is power. That's so true, Leon, that as we learn together, we will proactively be able to step into these conversations with our kids. So the very first thing that I thought was really interesting, Leon, in this chapter was there was a quote, I believe, that said, being with screens is a lot easier than being with people.
Yeah.
The author made the point of saying that, you know, when you're on a screen, they don't care what you look like. They don't care how you're feeling. They, you know, like when you're with that screen, the screen, and if there's people interacting with you on it, you can kind of hide behind it and you don't have to have those upfront conversations one-on-one. And so it brings us to the place of, so why do we go to screens first? Why do we replace those social connections? Why do kids do that? And they gave us some signs to be looking for, right, Leon?
Yeah, that's right. They did. So some of those signs include kind of withdrawing, kids being super quiet when they get home, not wanting to talk about what's going on in their lives, isolating themselves a bit. And one of the things that the book mentions, Lindsay, is this issue of cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I was really interested in this because this was a perspective I had not considered. So when kids are bullied, like on the playground, While that's a terrible thing, it is usually between the person that's doing the bullying and the person receiving the bullying. And it's usually for a shortened period of time until there's a change. So say like they're out on recess, one of the kids is being bullied. There may be a couple other kids that know about it, but that's going to stop when they go back into the classroom.
Right.
Right. And while that's terrible, should be reported, should be addressed, it has a kind of a beginning and an ending, at least in that moment. Cyberbullying is done publicly. It's done on Instagram, on Facebook, on social media, whatever that social media form is. And now it's made public to everybody, and it's not just for a moment, it lasts.
Right.
Right? And yeah. So cyberbullying is really an issue.
Right. And it's the photos, the cruel comments, whatever it might be, those things live on and they're not limited to a physical location.
Right. And there's a sense of anonymity by the person doing the bullying, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm doing it to you face to face. I'm doing it behind the screen. And so while you may know my name, I don't have to face you.
Right.
In that. And so I think we need to look at this from two perspectives. One, from the perspective of our child who may be bullied mm-hmm. on screen, but also, and most of us don't want to think about this, is that our kids might be the one doing the bullying.
Right.
And so helping them to understand that we are responsible for the things that we put on social media. Wow, even as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, okay, is there an age limit that we even allow our kids on social media? Of course, every family has to make that decision, yeah. But I think the later, the better on that.
I would agree.
On that front.
I would agree. And I think that's an important first conversation for parents to have when it comes to social media and screens in general, just coming to an agreement on what that age is for your kids and your family. I thought some of the survey stats on cyberbullying were interesting. Leon, it said that a national survey of 4,500 12 to 17-year-olds said this about cyberbullying. 34% had experienced it. 17% had experienced it in the last 30 days. 4 out of 5 of those cyberbullied said mean comments were posted. And 70% of those cyberbullied said someone spread rumors about them. And 64% of those cyberbullied said it really affected their ability to learn and feel safe at school. And I know that I've seen this happen for families, even in my own family with schools, that it might not be a good fit because of a bullying situation, but they go to a different school and it just follows them because it's the cyberbullying is living online.
Right. You know, and again, that's the difference between it being online and being just face to face, right?
Right. Right. And so anyways, I just thought that was interesting, those stats there. And it said that 12% admit they had cyberbullied others. And the most common behaviors were 60% spreading rumors, 58% posting mean comments, and 54% threatening to hurt someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are pretty high numbers.
Yeah, they are. And so the book says this, I believe this to be true, and I'm just going to read it verbatim because I think she puts it so well. We cannot throw up our hands and say, I just don't understand the latest technology. We have to be aware of warning signs when a child is being cyberbullied.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so those warning signs they shared are exactly what you shared at the beginning of this conversation. Just any kind of increase or decrease in device use, and emotional responses to what they are seeing on their devices that are out of the ordinary, paying yeah. close attention to those things.
Yeah, just a change in typical habits, patterns mm-hmm. of their life. So all of a sudden, if they're a talkative child, all of a sudden they're not talking much. If they're a quiet child generally, and all of a sudden they're talking a lot, there's just lots of things like that that parents can be aware of.
Hiding a device.
Yeah.
Will tell
you
something's up.
You come
up
in the room and all of a sudden they're scrambling to get off whatever.
There's probably something going on there.
Yeah,
whether
yeah,
it's bullying on their end or they're being bullied, there's something to dive deeper into.
Or,
there.
Of course, you know, we haven't really talked about this, but just inappropriate things
that
they're
too.
Running across, oftentimes innocently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why we need to pay close attention as parents.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, there were some statistics that they shared in the book that were alarming. I said at the beginning of this that this was a hard topic for me, and this is where some of that hard sense comes as I read through mm-hmm. and looked at this. So they talked about clinical depression quite mm-hmm. a bit, and the statistics that are associated with depression, and it seems its connection to screen time. So they said part of the anxiety comes from this sense of when I'm on social media that I have to brand myself.
Yeah.
So we've all heard about the fact that the people we know on social media and the way they present themselves probably isn't very accurate to who they really
sure.
are as a person.
Yeah.
We see all the good stuff about who they are. And so there's this sense that I have to create an image that I want to portray to the rest of the world. And there's a sense of anxiety that comes with making sure I get on social media every day, making sure I'm making these posts that show what a wonderful life I have and all of these kinds of things, which has led to an increase in depression.
Mm.
And so, One of the studies that was done by John Hopkins, a very respected hospital, that did a study on the rising rate of depression among youth. And from the years 2005 to 2014, so a 10-year period, there was a 37% increase in youth reported depression.
Mm.
Which is pretty alarming. And it seems to correspond somewhat with the invention of both the iPhone and Facebook in particular. So here's some of the things that I found. So at this point, about 42% of 10-year-olds have their own iPhone.
Hmm.
42% of 10-year-olds, and about 91% of those starting at age 14.
Okay.
So that is a lot. And as you know, we can have all of these filters and things on our computers at home so that kids are protected from things that we don't want them to be exposed to. But a lot of that is not available for phones.
Mm-hmm.
And so kids can easily, it's secret. It's in my pocket. I can go into a room by myself, you know, whatever it is in secret. And so that's a pretty high percentage of our kids that have either iPhones or some kind of a phone device. And then, and I mentioned earlier that rise in depression of about 37% was kind of corresponding with iPhones and Facebook, but also with iPads. So in 2010, mm-hmm. there were 2 million iPads available. And that was the first year that the iPad came out.
I remember that.
3 years later, it went from 2 million people having iPads to 33 million people having iPads 2 years later.
Wow.
And that 33 million each year just kept growing and growing and growing until this last year in 2023, 135 million iPads were sold in 2023.
Really?
That 135 million.
Staggering.
And that is a drop by 10% from 2022.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
Okay, here's the thing, Leon. I remember in 2010 going into Best Buy, and I had been saving up for an iPad because I had heard all about them and how you could, I'm a reader, and I heard about how you could read books on these things and, like, you know, really was excited to go get it. And so thinking about the progression of that over these years, that's fascinating.
It really is.
Wow.
And one thing I wasn't able to find is how many of those 135 million sold last year are in the hands of kids.
Sure.
And teenagers. And I suspect that number is pretty high.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, again, this is not a negative assessment on iPads,
right.
iPhones, technology, all that stuff. We just need to be aware. So I think oftentimes our kids just go jump on their iPad or on their phone. We have no idea what they're looking at. And that's where we want to be aware.
Right, right. And I also think they say in the book that being on your phone or tablet ultimately leads to less of that face-to-face conversation or face-to-face time and meaningful conversation. And we're going to talk about more of this, spoiler alert, in the good news, that there is an antidote to these things that we can give our kids. And that face-to-face time and meaningful conversation is part of that. But it's just important for us to realize that while what starts out as an innocent, you know, this is something that can be helpful to my everyday life and makes things easier and wow, this is so great, it really does pull you away from those needed practices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another piece of research that I thought was really interesting was that not only is depression on the rise with screens, but also anxiety is on the rise.
Right.
And it said in the book that the Higher Education Research Institute at UCLA had been talking with incoming freshman college students.
Yep.
And when was that? That was in, let's see, since 1985, they've been talking with incoming freshmen. And in 1985, 18% replied with, they were given the question, do you feel overwhelmed with everything you have to do? And they replied in 1985, 18% replied yes. And then by 2000, that number climbed to 28%. And by 2016, to almost 41%.
Wow.
So I don't know where that is now in 2024.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's, as a professor, Leon, wouldn't you say you would think it's a higher?
So you and I both work with students.
Yes.
And this is like the number one thing. And one of the things that we have found is that a lot of this comes because of a lack of sleep in part.
Yes.
So that's connected to screen time.
Mm-hmm.
So in place of sleep, I'm finding comfort and I'm finding acceptance and I'm finding my needs being met by my screens.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually causing a lack of sleep. There's been lots of studies on this one.
Yeah.
A lack of sleep. And so now college students in particular, but not just college students, I would say this is high school students and children who are not monitored when it comes to their devices, are spending time. I mean, they're actually falling asleep with their screens in their hands.
Yeah.
You probably know as well as I do that how easy it is for a half an hour to pass without realizing it because
sure.
you've been on social media. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just all of a sudden it's like, where did that half an hour go?
Yeah.
It sure didn't seem like that.
Right.
And so this is becoming a problem for college students because there's no monitoring mm-hmm. of it. And
yeah, it's tough. And one of the things I thought was fascinating is you take these college freshmen that they'd been looking at, talking through in this study, and they shared that these college freshmen are 6 times more anxious than their great grandparents.
Yeah.
Okay, Leon, that's not that long ago.
Great
grandparents, it's only a couple generations.
Yeah, and their great grandparents are likely to have been like the generation that went to war.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, okay. So let me see if I can get this straight. Our anxiety level today among college students is 6 times what it was for their great grandparents who served and dealt with World War II.
Right.
Okay. That's, how is that even possible?
Right.
What more level of anxiety can you have than to have to be either a part of a war, serving in a war, or being the people at home waiting for those you love to come home?
Yeah. So it shows us how powerful these screens are on our emotional health.
Yeah.
Okay. I promise we're almost through the bad news.
Yeah.
Leon. And there's just a few more things we want to touch on.
Yeah. And this one's really bad.
Yeah, it is.
These are statistics on suicide, and I hate to even bring this up, but we need to be aware,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So there has been a 56% increase from 2007 to 2017, in particular among teenagers, a 56% increase in suicide during that time. And for 10 to 14-year-olds, it has tripled in that time from what it was in 2007 to what it is in 2017. And of course, that information is 7 years old. So who knows what it is now.
Right.
So these statistics were things that were provided in the book. And one of the things I love about this book is they do great, great research. These are not just like some fly-by-night research, you know, that was done with 100 people and they make all these assessments about it. But these are serious research experiences.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of the suicide tendencies come from a root in feeling alone and feeling isolated. And one of those pieces of research, I believe it was from the University of California, Berkeley, in the book, they shared that the more time teen girls spend on social media and smartphones, the more likely they are to be depressed and start exhibiting suicide-related behaviors. And that boys' depressive symptoms increased by 21%. From 2012 to 2015 when they were doing this study, while girls increased by 50%.
Wow. And so here's the other thing along with that this is cyclical. So there's a
yes.
cycle to this.
Yes.
So I'm depressed because of my screen.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? I go to my screen.
I go to my screen.
And so this is where these students get just in this spiral effect.
Mm-hmm.
That
goes to the addiction side of it that we talked about in the brain science.
That's right.
In our first episode,
yeah.
That it really is something that your brain, you know, goes, it can change your brain chemistry.
Yeah. So what we're not saying is that all of the emotional, psychological issues that kids and teenagers are having are a result of their screens, but we can say that their screens contribute to it.
Yes.
And so if you have a child who is struggling, and I'm not going to prescribe to people what they should do, but if you have a child who is struggling with anxiety and depression, one of the things that seems to be a factor in contributing to it and making it worse would be their screens.
Yeah.
So that may be one thing to consider, limiting the amount of access that they have and the amount of time that they have with their screens.
Yeah. And let's not give adults a free pass on this. You know, if you are noticing as a parent or just in your own life, more anxiety, more maybe tendency towards depression, I would absolutely, you know, recommend that you take some time off of your phone and screens in your life. You know, just give yourself a little bit more boundaries and more connection with meaningful conversations with others, which brings us to some good news.
Yes, because we spent a lot of time in this podcast on the bad news.
We did.
And again, we just want you to be aware.
Yes.
Okay, so let's get to some good news.
Okay, the good news. Let's just start with an acronym. I'm wondering if you know what this acronym means, Leon. An ESA. Have you heard this acronym?
ESA? Yes. I don't think so.
So ESA stands for an emotional support animal.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Got it.
So in the world of student life, residential life here at Olivet, we have a lot of students that come here with an ESA, with an emotional support animal that lives with them and gives them exactly as you would think, some emotional support to feel that they have companionship, that they are able to have some structure in their life, taking care of the animal and all those things. However, the author talks about ESAs and reminds us that as parents for kids in our lives, we get to be an emotional support to them. We have the opportunity to be an emotional support to them. And their emotional growth is progressive. And I think this is some of the best news,
yes,
Leon, because emotional growth, we know emotional intelligence grows as you mature. And as you have life experience and as you learn more things about the world, about yourself, there's always something more to be learned. And so emotional health in our kids does not need to stay in this hopeless place. It can continue to grow and it can move forward. And the way that it can move forward is by naming and reframing. And we've talked a little bit about this back in our Healthy Parenting series where we talked about mental health. But naming and reframing is simply this. You name the feelings your child is experiencing. So it might be something like your child starts crying because they want dad. Dad's on a business trip. And you can say, you're feeling lonely because the person you want to be with isn't here. And then your child can repeat that back to you in whatever way fits them and say, yeah, I do feel that way. And I wish they were here and I feel lonely without them. And then you can say, okay, well, let's sit down. Let's pray about that. And then maybe we can give dad a call and you can see him tonight. You named how they're feeling, but you reframed it in a way that you said, I see you. Your feelings are valid. Let's take that to the Lord. And let's also include dad in this conversation the best that we can. And now we can move on. And you've kind of grown through that process together. And so it sounds simple, but it's really, really powerful. When you give names to emotions and identify them, it helps kids to understand what they're feeling. And it also gives them really good awareness to what others are feeling as they grow.
And that takes some intentionality on the part of the parent, right? Because it's easier just to say, stop crying, or it'll be okay, or whatever. So just to... I like what you said, reframe, state the emotion they're dealing with, and then help them to recognize that you understand, and then to go to God. So that we're kind of combining a couple things here. We're combining healthy emotional patterns with our spiritual development that we're trying to create in our kids kind of all at the same time, which is what our podcast is about, right?
Yeah. And let's not forget, Leon, the power of a snack. I've talked about this before.
You have, yes.
I'm really passionate about this one.
Yeah, you and your snacks. I
yes,
like that.
I do. I'm a snacks kind of
girl. I want to grow up in your family.
We're snacks kind of people. And, you know, this is a whole nother podcast probably that we could talk through of just the impact and the connection of the gut to the brain. And how there are actually more neurons in our guts than in our brains that tell us how we're feeling. And so when a child says their stomach hurts, their stomach probably really does hurt, but it's probably anxiety flaring up in them. Mm-hmm. And giving them a granola bar, giving them that fruit snack, something that can help kind of calm that reaction, goes a very long way and goes straight to those neural pathways in their brains. So I also think it's important to name, reframe, and just get a snack too.
I like
it. That can always help.
I like the snack.
Yeah.
You know, I think you should start bringing snacks to our podcast.
Okay, Leon. I will. I will absolutely do that.
But then I'll be crunching in the microphone and that probably would be good. So that's not the only thing that we can do. So again, we're going to go back to an earlier podcast for a moment.
Uh-huh.
So one of the things that they said is the importance of mealtime.
Yes.
If you remember, this is kind of a big deal for me because I didn't do this as well as I would have liked to when my kids were younger. And I recognize the importance of it now, that this mealtime is a time to set the phones aside, to engage with each other. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that helps kids with their anxiety, with potential depression that they're dealing with, is for them to be able to talk. Mm-hmm. And so when they have our undivided attention, they're in an environment where we're not going anywhere. We're going to sit here and eat together, and we're not going to rush through this. We're going to actually spend some time talking. This gives them an opportunity to know that we care about the things that they're feeling, for them to also express some of those things, and even give them an opportunity when they can't speak the words to describe what they're feeling, that as a result of questions that we ask and things that they say, we can begin to interpret mm-hmm. a little bit of what they may be feeling.
Oh, yeah. And just a safe space where they feel known, where they feel loved, they feel seen. School is fast and furious for most kids. They don't get very much downtime, especially when it comes to eating. You know, lunch is like, eat as quick as you can and now on to the next thing. And so just giving them that time to share is so, so important.
Yeah. And being in a community, mm-hmm. You know, most of our listeners are church people.
Yep.
And man, our faith community is so important to our health.
It is.
Boy, I could go on and on and on, probably have before, about the importance that faith community plays, that God designed us as communal people. It was never intended for us to be alone. And when anxiety and depression hit us, our tendency is to kind of move away from the crowd and isolate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the most unhealthy thing we can do.
Right.
So providing a place for our kids to be connected with other adults who are of like faith.
Right.
Other kids who are on the journey with us,
yep.
and families who just enjoy being together socially. Those are important experiences for our kids. And the better our kids can connect socially with other people, to be able to look them in the eye, to have a conversation with them in place of the screen,
right,
is so important to their health.
It is. And it's really important that when those days come that your children are feeling isolated, that they're a bit off. Sometimes as parents and caregivers, we can not see it right away because it's just, you know, you're in the mode of everyday life, right? But when you have those tight-knit communities, then someone else has eyes on your kids for you. You know, and there's someone else that can speak into their life, speak into your life and say, hey, I felt like they were a little off. Everything okay? And
yeah,
that's so important into, you know, getting ahead of some of these things that can have an effect on emotional health.
Right. Well, this has been such an important topic for us. We've gone really long today.
We have?
Yeah,
oh,
we have.
No. It went so fast.
I know.
I didn't feel like it was that long at all.
Yeah.
Sorry,
so
everybody.
So thanks for hanging on with us through that. So as we wrap this up, what words of encouragement do you want to give to our parents on this topic?
I would just say my word of encouragement, what I've been remembering, especially when it comes to emotional health, is that our God is a God of emotions. He gets it. He knows all the things that we feel and how it affects our lives. And just to remember that as we turn our eyes to Him in, you know, our daily lives, but specifically each week as we gather with our church families, to just know that He's present with you as you and your family discern what habits need to look like for screen time.
Yeah.
That He wants to come into those places and fill it with more connection rather than disconnection in our emotional health. And so fight for the connection is what I want to say. Fight for the connection, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. And then out of that come policies. That's too strong of a word. But habits that we will create, limitations that we'll put on how screens are being used, the amount of time we're going to be on them, when we're going to be on them, some limitations. And then I think we're going to find the health of our kids and our families overall are going to be much stronger.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, next week we have a surprise for, have we alluded to this yet?
We have.
I think we have. Okay.
I believe so. Yeah. So Arlene Pellicane, one of the authors of Screen Kids, will be with us next week on the podcast.
On the podcast. So we have that, which is separate from the webinar.
Right.
Which is on May 7th. May 2nd.
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yep. So we're going to get to know Arlene really well from the podcast here to our webinar. So excited to have her join us. Next week on the podcast, we're going to talk to Arlene what it looks like to put together a technology plan for your family and how to model as parents and adults good screen time practices in our own lives.
Yeah, so we hope. Yes, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, that's fine.
So we hope that will be really practical.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it will be.
So if you've been listening to us the last 3 weeks and you've been thinking, wow, they've thrown a lot of stuff at us and not really sure what to do with that, you need to be with us next week because Arlene's going to really help give us some how-tos.
That's right.
For this.
Yes.
Okay, so we want to remind you once again of the webinar that is going to be on May 2nd. And there's going to be giveaways with that. We encourage you to share that information with families at your church so they can be a part of that as well. You can find all the signups for that at centerff.com. And once again, we're thankful that you hung out with us today. And we hope that some of the things that we shared will give you time to think through some important things in your life when it comes to the way you handle screens. May the Lord bless you, keep you, and give you peace. You've been listening to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. Sign up for additional resources at centerff.com. When building faith, we are better together.